You are listening to Studying Pixels, a podcast on game studies and video game culture. I'm Stefan, I'm a game studies scholar from Germany, and you can find us every Sunday on studyingpixels.com and wherever you get your podcasts. Today we're going to have a conversation about motion capturing. It is one of these parts of video game development and the video game industry that I've never been much in touch with. You know, when you watch a super amazing cutscene in a video game and you just think, wow, this was so amazing, so compelling, so emotional, so involving. Part of the reason why you might experience it as such is there's probably really good motion capturing involved. At least in the last, I would say, 10 to 15 years, motion capturing has really become a very essential cornerstone of video game development. That's exactly what we're going to be talking about in an interview with Jimmy Corvin, who's had lots of experience in the domain of motion capturing. We're going to go into the fascinating aspects of motion capturing, how exactly it works, and the intricacies, maybe even the misconceptions, that revolve around the technology and the implementation of motion capturing in the process of video game development. But before we go into that, let me briefly remind you that if you like this show and you want to help us make it happen, then you can do that by supporting us on Studying Pixels Plus. There you will get all of our episodes entirely ad-free. You'll get a lovely sticker and monthly Plus episodes. And you know what? We have debated internally a little bit about whether we should make more tiers available for Studying Pixels Plus, because usually it's $5 a month. And we thought it might be appealing to offer a lower entry tier and a higher tier just for people who want to give us some extra support. So what you can do is you can sign up for Studying Pixels Plus for now just $3, and you'll get everything except for the sticker, because the sticker obviously costs some money to produce, and with $3 a month, that simply doesn't suffice. Or you can pay more if you want to. It's kind of a pay as much as you want model. You can also subscribe for $10 a month if you have a little bit more of expendable income and you want to just really support us in making this show happen. So if you're curious about that, then feel free to head over to studyingpixels.com/plus to find out more. We would be eternally grateful.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Okay, so today we're going to talk about motion capturing with Jimmy Corvin. He worked as a business development manager at the motion capture studio House of Moves for about 11 years. And they got a really impressive portfolio. I went through their website and I looked at all the stuff that they had done. They were very active in the domain of films, like they worked very closely with Marvel. For example, if you watched Spider-Man or Iron Man, but even things like the Men in Black films or Kong Skull Island, these are really like high-profile productions that they were involved in. And the same really goes for video games. They worked on Resident Evil 7 Biohazard, on Mortal Kombat, on Dragon Age Inquisition, on God of War, on Call of Duty, and so many, many more video games. Really interesting. Now, Jimmy Corvin, he actually has left House of Moves and he now works at Room 8 Group as an enterprise sales director. Room 8 Group is kind of a major development studio that contributes to titles such as Control or The Crew 2. In other words, what I'm trying to say is that Jimmy Corvin has lots of experience under his belt, specifically, but not only, in the domain of motion capturing. And we're going to talk about the magic of motion capturing and why he ultimately decided to change direction and take a different path. I'm very happy that he's here with us now. Hey, Jimmy.
Hi, Stefan.
Motion capturing is a bit of a niche field, you could say, a very specific kind of domain to work in when it comes to video game development. So I would be curious, what got you into motion capturing? What was the kind of, do you have a kind of spark that told you that's what I want to do?
Kind of. So the spark was, as I was finishing my master's, I knew I wanted to be in the video game space and I knew I wanted to find some way to break into the industry. It's a very difficult industry to work in for the first time. And in my struggles to work with like a developer immediately, I started to look for avenues that are kind of game adjacent. And that led me to motion capture, where a friend of mine happened to work for a company that makes cameras and software. And so I could talk to him about kind of breaking into the industry that way.
So it was kind of your way to get closer to video game development.
Exactly. Exactly. My life before motion capture or games in general was in finance, which almost couldn't be further away from game development. And so I just wanted a way to be as close as possible to making games.
Was there anything particularly fascinating about motion capturing? Because to me, as someone who's not really initiated and who doesn't see the process, but only the end result in the game, it has something quite magical to it. I still remember the times when games transitioned into motion capturing as a predominant technology that was employed. And it was like, wow, for the first time, it looks now like they're actual people, actual actors, actual characters on the screen.
Yeah, I had that same kind of sense of wonder the first time I saw it. You know, I mentioned a friend of mine worked for a company and visiting him at work, stepping out on stage, seeing this massive volume with lights everywhere. And you look up on screen and the person who's on stage waving their arms, I see the character up on screen waving their arms and my mind was just blown. I mean, granted, this is more than 10 years ago and so things have gotten significantly nicer looking, but I just couldn't believe that something existed where somebody could put on what looked like a funny looking suit and all of a sudden, you know, Mario is up on screen waving just like the actor was. And I immediately fell in love.
So, but the key principles of motion capturing, they still remain largely unchanged, right? You still have a room that is basically has a green screen or blue screen or something, and then an actor with a suit with these little bobs glued onto it.
Yeah, the general principles are the same. The accuracy and the fidelity is kind of what's gotten better. And I guess I should mention the weight and size is what's changed. Yeah. And that is to the actor's benefit more than anybody else.
Was it like heavy to wear such a suit at first?
It wasn't necessarily. So the suit that they wore on their bodies, it was more that the markers, that's the little balls that look like ping pong balls. They used to be very, very large and solid. So if you fell, they weren't fun to necessarily fall on. And now they are very small, say 6-ish millimeters and squishy. And the weight side is for facial capture, where you have a camera on somebody's head, where they used to put 3 or 4 pounds on somebody's head. And when your head weighs 8 pounds, roughly, adding that much weight can cause substantial strain when you're trying to shoot for 8 hours a day. And so now that they're down under about a pound or so, it makes it a lot easier on the actors.
So they are basically at least two different technologies at work, if I understand this correctly. One that tracks these little ping pong balls on the body and the other one that tracks the facial expression specifically?
Yes, exactly. And so the body We put these markers all over the body to capture your joints, specifically how the bones of your joints are moving. And then a separate technology is you wear a helmet. They're called a head-mounted camera, and it has about a 1 foot metal bar on it with a camera pointed straight at the actor's face. And it's just capturing nothing but the facial movements to get kind of that really expressive look that actors have for their characters.
But how do you get the movements of a real life person to translate into this, let's say, fully animated character? Because you mentioned Super Mario earlier, and the physique of Super Mario is significantly different from the physique of any actor that you could possibly hire.
So Mario is actually a bad example. I should not have used that at the beginning, because Mario isn't somebody that I would typically recommend you use motion capture for. The more realistic that somebody moves, or something, we can capture animals, the more realistic that the end result is going to be, the more likely that motion capture is an applicable technology to use to move you closer to a better product. And so when you look at games like Last of Us, for example, where you're talking about very, like, extremely human-looking humans, in fact, the actors and actresses look a lot like their characters, that is when you're going to get the best results. Worst results are when you're going from somebody like Mark Ruffalo to the Hulk, where the proportions are wildly different, and there are reasons that I can get into for, like, why you should still use motion capture. But transferring Mark Ruffalo's performance into the Hulk it's a tougher ask. It's a tougher task for the animators after we've captured everything.
So basically, you've got the captured material, and then you've got to do the animation work in order to translate it to an actual character that is on screen. Because you said, I mean, obviously there must be a reason why people use motion capturing, and it's probably to save the animators time, right? Because otherwise they would have to animate every single thing individually.
Exactly. So there's a couple different reasons of why we use motion capture. One is certainly to save time. Giving an animator a shot that has, let's just say, me walking across the room just to get a walk cycle for, let's just say, gameplay reasons. It's not going to be perfect. Motion capture is not an end result. It is a step in the production pipeline. And an animator does still need to finesse each shot to make sure it works within what's necessary for the game. Now, the fidelity is getting closer and closer. So 10 years ago when I started, body motion capture might get you 80% of the way to final. Nowadays, it might be closer to 90%. So, you know, we're just chipping away at percentages of what we consider final, but there still is always going to need to be an animator there to make sure that everything fits within what's necessary for the game.
If we talk about such things like such basic things like walking animations, I've just been wondering, is that basically a looped animation? Because if I walk around as Joel in The Last of Us, then I technically can walk around infinitely and the animation will still always continue playing.
Exactly. So what we'll do for in-game motions are capture move trees. And that is, you capture everything that you think you need a character to do, and the game engines, like Unreal, will loop that animation. So for example, one day for Joel's animation will be step on stage and tell the actor, walk forward, and then walk forward, turn right 90 degrees, walk forward, turn right 45 degrees, walk forward, turn right 180 degrees. Now do the same thing with left, and then do the same thing with walk forward and then jump, walk forward and then duck. And so it's all these different combinations of things that you could do with the character, and the game engine will then create blends so that it loops and blends, so that either you walk infinitely, so it just loops and loops and loops, or if it needs to, it blends into walk infinitely and then jump at the end of it. And Unreal will, when you give it the right pieces, will figure out how to make all those blends work together.
Now, that is, of course, a tremendous amount of work, just like game development is in general. I was wondering, where does motion capturing come in the process of developing a video game? Because, of course, I need to have first an idea of all the things that the character ought to be able to do, and I need to have some form of script so that I can shoot cutscenes and stuff. At which point does it come in the process of the entire scope of game development?
It comes in three different parts. One is at the very beginning, where they're shooting what we call animatics. And that's basically a very, very early rough look at the whole story cinematic. And they'll bring in, it doesn't need to be the final actors, but they will bring in actors and basically hand them the script and say, we're going to run through this whole thing and just really roughly see what it looks like on screen. And so you put it, it tends to be gray characters with in a gray area with boxes that represent tables and, you know, tall sticks that represent trees, stuff like that. It's like incredibly low fidelity, but it shows you on screen what all the story beats are. The next step is starting to capture gameplay, which is once you're in production, you're capturing all that in-game stuff. You're capturing fights if you need to do fights. You're capturing reloads for first-person shooters. And once the script is more or less done, the story is locked, that's when we go back into the studio and say, okay, here's the real talent. We need to dedicate a day to 1 minute, 2 minutes of cinematics, and we're going to try to get that much done in one day.
And the third part, because you said something comes in at the third part as well?
Oh, I'm sorry. The first part was at the very beginning.
The animatics.
The second is the gameplay, which kind of happens fluidly from around when you're shooting animatics through production. And then the third part is shooting the cinematics, shooting the story beats, which happens after a lot of things are locked in the game, and you already know all the story beats. So it's kind of, there's a lot of overlap, but they are three different portions of the game design.
I find that super interesting because, of course, when I think of motion capturing, I immediately think of bombastic cutscenes or very like emotionally resonating moments, such as in these The Last of Us cutscenes. But of course, as you mentioned, a lot of other things and minor details need to be captured as well. Is the loading animation in a first-person shooter, is that something that's typically motion captured?
Yes. Like reloading a gun?
Yeah.
Absolutely. And so you're starting to hit on a very gray line in the motion capture space, which is whether or not you want correctness or accuracy. And I know that sounds weird. Authenticity. And I know that sounds weird because something that is correct should also be authentic. But when you're reloading a pistol, for example, I don't know the names of all the pistols, but pretend it's a real pistol that is reloaded a very specific way. We will capture, they'll bring in somebody who knows how to reload this specific pistol and capture them doing it so that when you're playing Call of Duty, for example, when you reload the pistol, it looks like a Marine would look if they were reloading this pistol. The other aspect of this is authenticity, which comes more on the cinematic side, where we want an authentic performance from the actors. And what we're getting is more than their motion, even though it's technically motion capture. I call it capturing the human frequency. And what we're really doing is trying to capture the essence of what the actor is putting into this character. And a really good example of this, to go back to Last of Us, is Ashley Johnson as Ellie. The character of Ellie was written to be much more passive, not necessarily quite like as sassy as she comes off in the game. And the actor, Ashley Johnson, just on set throughout development, began to put more and more of her own personality into Ellie. And the writers and the producers caught on to this and are like, that is now Ellie. This is our Ellie. We need this to be our character. And so Ashley Johnson's personality ends up blending into Ellie. The character becomes more sassy, up to and including there are entire parts of the game of the first Last of Us where Ellie is supposed to stand around and just kind of like idly watch Joel help her out of a situation. And they rewrote it so that she's involved the whole time, because that's Ashley's personality for Ellie. And what they captured there is Ashley's human frequency, and it became the character.
Yeah, that's an impressive part of the artistry, right? Of working with actors where you try to identify where their strengths lie, what their personalities are, what they bring to the character.
Mm-hmm.
Can I imagine that in motion capturing that there is some wiggle room for improvisation and such things, that it's just basically like shooting a film that you say, we shoot this or this scene and we shoot it several times and maybe you throw in a line here or there or a movement here or there?
Absolutely. In fact, that's typically a planned part of motion capture production. Is we call them pickups. That can be correcting something that was wrong or just letting somebody ad-lib a little bit. They'll hand the actor the script, they'll perform it to the script. And even if they get it right, a lot of times we'll do a second or third shot and say, do what you need to do, feel it out, add what you need to add, take out what you need to take out, and just see what kind of works.
That must be a lot of material that's being recorded. Is it like, can I imagine it's similar to film production, that you basically have like a completely absurd relation between the things that actually end up in the game and the things that are being shot and eventually just thrown away?
Yes. it's probably significantly less than, I shouldn't even say probably, it is less than movies. Games teams tend to come on set, I don't want to say more prepared, but because they already live in the digital space all the time, game developers already live in the digital space all the time, there tends to be a lot less experimentation on stage trying to figure out what this is going to look like, when you finally print it. But there is, a fair amount that ends up getting thrown away. I can give a personal example of working on Resident Evil 7, where there's, I think it's the second or third chapter of the game. There's a big family dinner. You're kind of introduced to all of the characters that are in the mansion, and it's a big, like 4-minute scene. And we shot that on three different times. So three different dates, three different ways. And each time was just cutting hours and hours and hours and hours of work and animator time. And it's just, it wasn't right. It was close. And each time they liked it on set. And then we got to like, this is finally what they want. And at the end, it wasn't the right scene for the game, so let's shoot it again.
So they would review the material, because obviously then these are studios that give the motion capturing to an external team, and that basically is contractually tied. And you deliver the footage and the animation work, and then they review it, and they say, can you do this again?
It's less about, typically, it's less about the work that the motion capture company does and more about, this isn't the right story for this part of the game. Like, they changed how many people were at the table one time. They changed massive lines, like the direction at the table sometimes. And so even when the script is locked and you're in and you're kind of performing everything, changes still happen as the game starts to come together. And it's like, well, we're going to throw away that 5-minute scene that we've already shot and animated, and it's basically done for all intents and purposes. Let's do it all over again.
Would you say that generally motion capturing for films, which you also have lots of experience in, and motion capturing for video games, are these processes, do they feel different when doing them?
They feel pretty different. Technically speaking, they're identical. I use the exact same technology and processes for Resident Evil, for example, as I did for any Marvel movie that I've worked on. So the technology is the same. The pipelines are more or less the same. The difference is working in a space where you can see what's going on. That is, on a game set, typically the teams will come in and want to show the actors, here's what Ellie looks like. Here's the clicker that she's running away from. And you can see all that on the screen. And movie teams will come in and tell Mark Ruffalo, to go back to the Hulk example, like, hey, you're going to pick up a taco in this scene. Just pretend you're picking up a taco in Endgame or something like that. And there's not really any reference footage. So there's a lot more theater feel to a lot of movie shoots that we do, assuming that we're not shooting on a set where, you know, there's set pieces all around and they're just going to put somebody into a live scene.
I assume that you have often like some kind of replacement objects, like when people hold something, that you would give something into their hand, even though it's not actually eventually in the animation.
Yes, exactly. So on the mocap set, the things that we care about that aren't really there are touch points. Anything that an actor is going to physically touch, we need to have something that gives the same amount of resistance. So if you're going to lean up against a wall, it can't just be like a flimsy board that they're going to fall through. You want something there that they can lean up against to kind of give that weight of the performance. And then the other side is eye lines. Going back to the Hulk, Hulk is a massive creature, and you don't want the actor looking Mark Ruffalo in the eye. You want the actor who's acting against Mark Ruffalo to look Hulk in the eye. So it is typically somebody's job, or they'll make something, to hold something above the Hulk and say, here's where Hulk's eyes are. Look at that ball on a stick instead of Mark Ruffalo. And they have to act against this ball on a stick.
It impresses me very much, this level of abstraction. For me, as someone who's got only very limited acting experience, I must say, I imagine it to be so difficult when you basically just sit there, and maybe you have even shoots where you have to interact with a character that is not actually, the actor is not actually on set or something, and it's like, you know, with a delayed time or something. That must be so difficult.
Yeah, and I've gotten the same feedback from actors that have a lot of experience The actors that tend to pick up motion capture the quickest are those trained in theater. And that's because theater actors are used to using their imagination to put all the pieces into place. Yes, on a stage, you see, you know, a painted 2x4 or something and know that that's a tree and you're kind of imagining that. But theater actors are used to working with very minimal visual stimulus. And so they can kind of put themselves into that place.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. so they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Now, what would you say, what are the common misconceptions about motion capturing? Because it sounds, on paper, it sounds so easy. You've got a person, they wear the suit, the light reflects off the little balls, and then you get all the thing, an animator fixes it up, done. It's it seems like a fairly easy thing, but I assume it is not that simple.
Right. The biggest misconception is that when we hit cut on the mocap stage, that is ready to go into the game. And it's because behind the scenes tend to show side by side of here's what it looked like on stage, here's what it looks like when you saw it on screen, and there's very little showing anything that happens in between. But the in between is somebody somewhere has to go through every shot and track every one of those little markers. So we tend to be about 50 markers on the body. On every frame, somebody has to go through and say, I can see every one of those 50 markers, and they are in the right place for every single frame of every single shot. And then somebody needs to go and put that information onto the character. Let's just go back to Joel. And that's when you hand it off to an animator. And then an animator turns it into what you finally see. And that is months and months and months of work.
Do you have to do this manual work of tracking these balls? Because it could happen that there's some kind of light reflection and the camera doesn't detect it?
Yes, or there's switching. It's called swapping. That happens where every marker that's on your body has its own name. So like your right front shoulder marker has a very specific technical name. And because the system is imperfect, it's very accurate, but it's imperfect, every once in a while it'll swap that right shoulder with its left shoulder.
And so that would look very weird in the animation.
Exactly. Actually, it just wouldn't, it would end up twisting the arm. Like it would twist your arm 180 degrees. And so somebody needs to go through and fix that, make sure that it's correct and that it's, each dot is named the correct, its correct name. And that's when you can kind of push it through the pipeline once all the dots are in their correct place.
How do you account for things like clothing items? Because when you wear the mocap suit, then it's literally, it's just a suit. It's a tight-fitted suit to track your bones and your joint movements. But then a character like, I don't know, in Devil May Cry, wears like a long scarf. That is then a manual animation that is brought in later.
It's probably, especially for the scarf in Devil May Cry, that is probably an automated, we call it simulation. It's called cloth sim to use jargon. But clothing in general is done after we've captured the body of the actor. You kind of hit on it that what we're capturing in the motion capture process is the bones that are, I mean, certainly not for the face, but in the bones that are in your body, that's what we're really capturing. We're not capturing any of the muscle mass. So if you flex on stage, the character's not all of a sudden going to have, you know, a bicep that bulges a little bit. That needs to be added in afterwards. And so once we have all the body movement, then you have somebody create cloth and you give it some kind of physics simulation. Every engine functions differently. And so for a scarf, they go through and say, make sure it's very, very flowy and it can't collapse in on itself. And so you throw the scarf on the animation that you were captured on set and kind of just look at it and hope that it works. And when it doesn't work, they go back to cloth sim and say, okay, I need to add more constraints so that it works properly.
What was your favorite motion capture shoot? And what was your least favorite motion capture shoot? And it doesn't have to be like, you don't have to say something super negative about any. And I know, of course, that every kind of, every motion capture shoot, I assume, has its own challenges and its own demands. But can you give us a little bit of insight into these specifics?
Yes. So my favorite is unfortunately not game related. And it was all subject matter. But I worked on the VR accompaniment to Elton John's Farewell Tour. And I got to basically sit in a room with four other people and get a private show from Elton John for 4 hours straight. It was just like one of those moments that I noticed myself put my phone down so that I could be in the moment. Not that I was recording. That wouldn't be allowed. There's massive NDAs, but it was a moment. And this has happened multiple times while I've been in motion capture, that I just felt myself feel like I need to be in this moment so that I remember this. I don't want to look at this on my phone. I want to remember this. And it was just such a visceral like feeling to be in that room. As far as least favorite, I certainly won't name names, but we were shooting a game. It was an indie title, and they showed up without talent, and the person who was doing all of the art direction was going to be the talent. They were making a medieval game, and you were watching somebody who is not a trained medieval artist try to simulate swinging a broadsword on stage, kind of fumbling all over himself, try to use a bow and arrow and like not really pull it all the way taut. And like the data is real, and you spot mistakes in the data, and you looking at the data, he's supposed to be, you know, an ace archer. And instead what we got was somebody's arms trembling to draw this bow. And it's just, it was so hard to make that data look usable that I don't know what else to say. I'm not actually certain whether the game actually came out or not, but it was one of the toughest things to sit and watch. So I'm like, this could have been avoided for $500. Get an actor who is looking for work that at least has the strength to do all these things. And it just didn't end up happening.
So this basically means that if you have someone who's not well-trained or maybe not competent in the specific moves that they need to deliver, then that means more work for the animation team afterwards to basically fine tune and to bring it up to a standard so that you could say now it is usable.
Yeah. So when you don't have very good data, you end up doing a process which is called keyframing. And I won't get into kind of the technical aspect of that, but in general, you're going frame by frame, typically 30 or 60 frames per second. You're going frame by frame, and an animator is putting the character into specific poses. So in the instance of an archer, like pulling the arm back and making it so that the archer is drawing this bow with some strength behind it. It's a very labor-intensive process. It's why animation tends to be very expensive. And you end up throwing away a lot of the motion capture data in favor of keyframe just to make this thing look right. And that doesn't necessarily mean that things went wrong. I'll add this of like when we work on Mortal Kombat, for example, a lot of that game, all the NetherRealms games are motion captured. And it's easy to think like people can't do those superhero moves, and they're absolutely right. People cannot do those. but you still motion capture it because a human's attempt at a lot of those moves will give you some very important key poses that the character needs to strike or hit, even if the timing is all wrong or they don't get there, you know, with any kind of grace. It ends up giving you really nice poses that are natural to the character. So we'll work with NetherRealm, shoot these moves that humans could never possibly do on their own. And then an animator goes in, throws away like 80 or 90% of the motion capture, but keeps some of these key poses and animates around those.
And then an actor would just like basically jump into the air, and then an animator would go in and would make the jump like three times as high, for example.
Exactly. Or add three flips in the process. But like you got the like leaving the ground, and then you got the strike, and then you got the like hero landing pose. And as long as you get those three, animators can kind of figure out everything else in between.
Now, clearly you are super passionate about motion capturing, which is why I have to ask, why did you leave the domain of motion capturing? Because I know you're now working at a different position and you're no longer involved directly in motion capturing. How did that decision come about?
I wanted to be, I followed my passion. I am passionate about motion capture. I am more passionate about games. My current company is all games all the time. I love movies as much as the next guy, TV, all that stuff. But my passion is with video games. And so the decision, while a very difficult one, was definitely to be closer to games. And now when people ask me what I do, it is, I talk to people about video games for a living. And like, that's a really great feeling. I know the people on the podcast can't see it, but like a smile goes on over my face every time somebody asks me, what do you do? Cause it's just like, yeah, I get to talk to people about video games.
Yeah, me too, actually. It's a great job.
Exactly.
Well, thank you so very much for coming by.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me.
That was Jimmy Colvin about motion capturing in video games. If you want to find out more, you can do that. You can, for example, go to the website of House of Moves. Their website is just moves.com. It's very easy to memorize. And his current employment is at Room 8 Group. That would be Room 8, as in the number 8, room8group.com. Also, as always, thank you out there very, very much for listening to this episode. Of course, you can, as always, submit your thoughts and questions on studyingpixels.com/contact. And you know what? Actually, the reason why this interview with Jimmy even came about is because Jimmy joined our Studying Pixels Discord server. So if you're curious and you want to join this community as well, you're very much invited to do so. It's entirely free, right? No strings attached. You can do that by going to studyingpixels.com. Just click the follow us button on the website and you will have the option to click on Discord. It will directly throw you into our server. Looking forward to see you there, and we'll talk again next week.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.